Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 19. The appearance of Shukadev Goswami, text 25. Tatra Bhavad Bhagavad Vyasa Putra Yadrichaya Gam Atamano Napeksha Alakshya Lingo Nija Labha Tushto Vritash Cha Balaya Avaduta Vesha Tatra Bhavad Bhagavan Tatra Bhavad Bhagavan Vyasa Putra Yadrichaya Gam Atamano Napeksha Alaksha Lingo Nija Labhatushto Vritascha Balaya Avaduta Vesha Tatra Bhavad Bhagavan Vyasa Putra Yadrichaya Gam Atamano Napeksha Alaksha Lingo Nija Labhatushto Vritascha Balaya Avaduta Vesha Tatra Bhavad Bhagavan Vyasa Putra Yadrichaya Gam Atamano Napeksha Alaksha Lingo Nija Labhatushto Vritascha Balaya Avaduta Vesha
Yadrichaya Gam Atamano Napeksha
Alaksha Lingo Nija Labhatushto
Tatra there Abhavat appeared Bhagavan powerful Vyasaputra son of Vyasadeva Yadvichaya as one desires Gam the earth Atamana, while traveling, Anapeksha, disinterested, Alakshya, unmanifested, Linga, symptoms, Nijalabha, self-realized, Tushta, satisfied, Vritta, surrounded, cha, and balai, by children, avaduta, neglected by others, vesha, dressed. Translation. At that moment there appeared the powerful son of Vyasadeva, who traveled over the earth, disinterested and satisfied with himself. He did not manifest any symptoms of belonging to any social order or status of life. He was surrounded with women and children, and he dressed as if others had neglected him. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The word Bhagavan is sometimes used in relation with some of the great devotees of the Lord, like Shukadeva Goswami. Such liberated souls are disinterested in the affairs of this material world because they're self-satisfied by the great achievements of devotional service. As explained before, Shukadeva Goswami never accepted any formal spiritual master, nor did he undergo any formal reformatory performances. His father, Vyasadeva, was his natural spiritual master because Shukadeva Goswami heard Srimad Bhagavatam from him. After this, he became completely self-satisfied. Thus, he was not dependent on any formal process. The formal processes are necessary for those who are expected to reach the stage of complete liberation. But Sri Shukadeva Goswami was already in that status by the grace of his father. As a young boy, he was expected to be properly dressed, but he went about naked and was uninterested in social customs. He was neglected by the general populace, and inquisitive boys and women surrounded him as if he were a madman. He thus appears on the scene while traveling on the earth of his own accord. It appears that upon the inquiry of Maharaj Parikshit, the great sages were not unanimous in their decision as to what was to be done. For spiritual salvation, there were many prescriptions according to the different modes of different persons. But the ultimate aim of life is to attain the highest perfectional stage of devotional service to the Lord. As doctors differ, so also sages differ in their different prescriptions. While such things were going on, the great and powerful son of Vyasadeva, appeared on the scene. Tatrabhavad Bhagavan Vyasaputro yad richayagam atamano napeksha alakshalingo nijalabhatushto vritaschaba alayaravadutavesha. At that moment there appeared the powerful son of Vyasadeva, who travelled over the earth disinterested and satisfied with himself. He did not manifest any symptoms of belonging to any social order or status of life. He was surrounded with women and children, and he dressed as if others had neglected him. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutalaya Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaura Hari Pacharne Nera Vishesha Shunyavadi Vastu Jyane Shatarne Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasti Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shukadeva Goswami is such an advanced devotee, such an extraordinarily advanced devotee, that he's referred to here in this verse as Bhagavan. Bhagavan Vyasa Putra. And of course we know that normally the term Bhagavan is used in relation to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his different expansions, incarnations like that. Because Bhagavan, literally, Bhaga, means opulences, and van means one who possesses. And in the ultimate sense, the one who possesses opulences and actually possesses all opulences, that is only the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everyone has some opulence. There are six, of course: wealth, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge, renunciation. Those are the six. So generally, everybody has at least a little of each of those. At least a little. And some have more than others. Some are very wealthy by worldly standards, some are very powerful by worldly standards, etc. But there's no question of anyone being able to say that they have all wealth, strength, beauty, etc. Except the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who actually does. And any wealth that any of us sitting here, or any people anywhere have, is just on loan to them from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who does possess all, just on loan. And in a few years, less than you may expect, he will take it back. Because when you depart from this world, depart from this body, you will not take 1 cent with you. So he'll take it all back, and your beauty. Everyone has some beauty. But even your beauty, normally the Lord takes back your beauty before you die. At least if you die of old age. As you become older, the beauty is definitely subtracted bit by bit. until you become some infirm old person who really is not at all beautiful or strong. Like this, everyone has some knowledge, but even though we have some knowledge, we learn so many things in school, but as time goes on, we forget all those things, so many of the things we learned, our Afrikaans and other nice things, we just forget. And so the Lord, but he possesses all. He can actually speak Afrikaans better than any farmer from the Free State. He has all opulences in full. Shishi Radha Radha Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Sri Giri Govardhana King. He has all opulences in full, and he just loans little bits to people and to living beings, and then takes it back. And there's this ongoing process of giving, taking back amongst the millions and huge number of living entities within the material world. So, but sometimes the term Bhagavan is used, we see that. Sometimes it is used in relation to people who are not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are living entities like ourselves, but they are special living entities, very outstanding. And they have, if not all six qualities in full, at least they have some to a very large, outstanding extent, at least like that. And Shukadeva Goswami is being described in these terms. He has the opulence, as mentioned here in this verse. And Prabhupada talks about it in the purport. He has the opulence of renunciation to a very remarkable degree, that he is not, and he also has the opulence of knowledge to a very great degree, very, very great degree, actually, like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he's going to speak Srimad Bhagavatam just shortly and display that, so that Srimad Bhagavatam, as spoken by him, it is the most outstanding and important and comprehensive of all the scriptures, including even Bhagavad Gita, which is spoken directly by Krishna himself in person. But Srimad Bhagavatam is even higher, as spoken by Shukadeva Goswami. So he's Bhagavan in these senses. In terms of the renunciation, as we read here, Srila Prabhupada makes the point that he was just wandering around naked. And it wasn't like he was some crazy fool who just doesn't know the difference between wearing clothes and not wearing clothes. He's this great, great, knowledgeable personality. But he's just so detached that he is, as described here, just disinterested, just not interested. It's not significant enough a point for him to really take into consideration, because he's just so absorbed in perfect understanding of better things than Are my clothes matching? Do my socks match? Each other. When we were young in the temple in London, it was considered, you know, a little socially unacceptable, like you're just too much into how you looked if you had matching socks. And if you had non-matching socks, you were considered to be, yes, a real devotee, because you were detached. So, anyway. But, therefore, he is referred to in the verse as Avaduta, which we, of course, we've heard that term before. It's applied to certain very great devotees, like Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, Vamsi Das Babaji, apparently, and surely there are many more too, but these ones we know about quite a lot, that they're also described as being Avaduta, and particularly in these terms of renunciation and just being so free from worldly conceptions and interests that they also just didn't care how they presented themselves in terms of dress and even sometimes certain aspects of conduct and speaking. They just didn't worry because they had higher subject matters in their minds that they were really interested in and really concerned about. So concerned and so interested in those things that they were basically oblivious to the other considerations of worldly presentation and so on like that. So Shukadeva Goswami, therefore he's referred to as Bhagavan because he possesses at least these two opulences to a very large extent, practically complete knowledge and practically complete renunciation. And he's also referred to here as being very powerful, the sort of person who, when he speaks, it makes a great impact on people's minds, so powerful in that sense. Yeah. And a great wealth of spiritual knowledge, realization, and spiritual experience. Even it's described earlier on in this first canto, it's described that, renunciation is the opulence of the Brahmins, yeah? It's a type of opulence because through that renunciation, on one hand, you become independent of the material nature, which otherwise drags you down and just destroys anything of value or anything nice in your life. And on the other hand, because that renunciation is based on the attachment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the Lord becomes the property of these devotees, the materially impoverished, but meaning the devotees, not just people who happen to be bankrupt, but the devotees who are so disinterested in material life, because they have so much interest in the Lord, So they're considered to be very opulent in those terms, because they, in some cases, they control Krishna. And Krishna has all opulences. And if you control the person who has all opulences, you have got all opulences at your disposal. You just tell them, need a few billion. And immediately, oh yes, take more. So, he's a very extraordinary personality. It's pointed out here that he was not dependent on any formal processes, and basically meaning like initiation and considerations of that sort, Prabhupada says, he had never accepted any formal spiritual master, nor did he undergo any formal reformatory processes, means like receiving different mantras, particularly. That's the main reformatory process for people who are conditioned souls, but they're aspiring and trying to progress spiritually and working on developing their spiritual lives. So they have to formally accept a spiritual master. There's a certain process we all know. And then they have to accept these certain different do's and do-nots, certain disciplines, which they have to just embrace in their lives completely, like following regulative principles and chanting mantras, accepting the sacred thread, chanting those mantras and the Hare Krishna mantra. In a formal sense, but Shukadev Goswami, he didn't do that, and he didn't have to do that. In previous lifetimes, surely he had done that. To come to this point of being such a unique devotee practically. But in this lifetime, he's so fully God conscious, Krishna conscious, that there's no need for him to go through those formalities. Although, very important point, he did hear Srimad Bhagavatam from his father, Srila Vyasadeva. Yes. So Vyasadeva didn't exactly initiate him and have a fire sacrifice and anything like that, and then speak the Bhagavatam. He just sat him down and spoke the Bhagavatam. There's an interesting description. I don't know if it's in this chapter or where it is exactly, but I think it's in the first, it's in the Bhagavatam somewhere, I think. First canto, how Shukadeva Goswami was in the womb of his mother for 16 years. And he had developed it physically. He had developed to the point of a 16-year-old, which is practically fully developed like an adult, or, you know, fairly close to it. But he was still within the womb of his mother. Can you imagine what it must have been like for her? It must have really been a major challenge. How would she walk anywhere? You know, a 16-year-old must weigh 50, 60 kilos, isn't it? Something like that. Normally a child when born is what? 3, 4, something like that. He must have been 50 or 60. Hare Krishna. Yes, anyway, let's not go into that too much. But Vyasadeva was aware, of course, that this is extremely difficult for his wife. Surely she must have informed him And so he requested Shukadev, please come out. And Shukadev said, well, no thanks. If I come out, I'm going to be exposed to the material world. Yeah. And I may, there's a possibility I may become attracted to something and then get into difficulty spiritually. And Vyasadev said, no, you're beyond these things already. So you don't need to worry about that. And Shukadev, he was Brahman, realized. And he said, you know, I'd rather not take the risk because it is Brahman outside. Well, Vyasa said, look, it is Brahman outside of the womb. It is Brahman inside. You come out, it's not going to. It'll just be Brahman. And Shukadev told him, well, I prefer Shishi Radha 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 King. I prefer the Brahman inside my mother's womb. It's easier to deal with. So thanks, but I'm not coming out. And Vyas tried to convince him, but Shukadev said, you just want me to come out because you're being henpecked by your wife. Yeah, so therefore, you're a householder, so you're influenced by your wife. You're not really, your thinking is not really pure. So eventually, Vyasadeva said, listen, if I get Lord Krishna to come from Dwarka, and if he promises you that you're not going to fall down if you come out, will you come out? And Shukadev said, okay. So Krishna came and promised him, gave him a guarantee that you come out and you'll not fall down. You'll just continue to be completely fixed on the spiritual platform. So Shukadev came out and ran away. That's described in the first canto, how he ran away. And with his father chasing him, come back, I have to train you. But Shukadev didn't come back, at least then. He just ran. And then Vyasadeva sent some of his disciples out and told them, just recite Srimad Bhagavatam loud. Just walk around, just reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. And after some time, you will see a young man, 16 years old, no clothes, and kind of wild young man, he'll start following you because he's attracted to the Bhagavatam. When you see that, then just come back to the ashram, but don't stop reciting the Bhagavatam. And that's how they got Shukadev to come back. And then Vyasadeva instructed him in Srimad Bhagavatam, as Srila Prabhupada mentions here. And in that way, Prabhupada says, Srila Vyasadeva became the natural spiritual master, not dependent on formalities and anything official at all, no contract. But simply on the basis of enlightenment, that he had given him Srimad Bhagavatam, which took Shukadev onto a higher level. He had been more or less on some impersonal level, at least somewhat impersonal, like Brahmavadi type of level. But when he heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Vyasadeva, it really It was a very amazing experience, and therefore Prabhupada says Vyasadeva was effectively his natural spiritual master in terms of giving him spirituality and giving him guidance. So then after being instructed by Vyasadeva, Shukadeva left again, and still with no clothes on. And again, it's not some eccentricity, it's not some lunacy of just being some sort of serious social misfit, but the fact is, he's just so absorbed in Krishna consciousness that he's not really aware of the material circumstances, therefore he doesn't bother with them. If we read chapter 19 of Nectar of Devotion, then we read the characteristics of a devotee on the level of Krishna Prema. And one of the characteristics of such devotees is that he cannot be understood by ordinary people, material people. Cannot, may not, sometimes be understood, because he's functioning in relation to Krishna. And he doesn't feel any implications from the material world at all. But the implications from Krishna he feels completely. Yes. And therefore it's expressed also in a slightly different way in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Vigyeha Na Uchaya. That a Vaishnava means, like Shukadeva Goswami, cannot be understood by ordinary people. Vigyeha na bujaya. Can't be understood. So even some personality like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, even though he's acting as Acharya, head of a major spiritual institution, and Srila Prabhupada himself sometimes they would act in such ways and the devotees would not really understand, even the devotees wouldn't really understand why did he make this decision, because on the material level it may seem to not make so much sense, and it might be better to make more sort of pragmatic and practical, to make some other decision. And a well-known case of this with Srila Prabhupada was when some of the devotees in America, few of the leading devotees in America, they made the decision that instead of every different ISKCON temple, and perhaps there were 50 of them at the time, or some fairly substantial number, instead of them just being independent, including legally independent and completely financially independent, instead of that, let us somehow or other change the legal statuses. So instead of it being, you know, ISKCON New York, ISKCON Los Angeles, etc., it's now ISKCON America, which will own all these different properties and so on, and then we will benefit, because we will be able to borrow more money from the banks and buy more whatever vehicles and maybe more buildings too. Just buy more. And then we can expand more the Krishna consciousness movement. Because after all, let's face it, this is how practically every business functions. Yeah. They take credit from the bank. And you know what to speak of businesses, but I think the great majority of just individuals, particularly if they buy a house, they remain in debt to the bank for a good part of the rest of their life. So we should do it to develop the Krishna consciousness movement. And Prabhupada heard that. And Srila Prabhupada became very, very disturbed and immediately very strongly stopped them. And at the time, they thought, why? You know, this is a good plan for developing the Krishna consciousness movement. But Srila Prabhupada, with his higher transcendental vision, he understood that even though you may be able to get more money, you know, on loan, but you could also get into more trouble. Because if one temple gets into serious difficulty and becomes sued, then all the other properties and whatnot can be taken over by the people if you owe them enough money. So this is an example of transcendental personality with transcendental vision and doing something which on the material level even many devotees may feel is faulty, but actually it's based on higher type of intelligence for the development of the Krishna consciousness movement. So yes, certainly Krishna is a lot more attractive once you become attracted and get over the stage of that we're doing Krishna consciousness because we have to and because, you know, we should and because it's the best thing, but we actually become more spontaneously attracted and doing everything Krishna conscious because we love it. And we just have absolutely no interest in anything else. So these great personalities like Sugadev Goswami, he's on that level, so attracted by Krishna, he's basically lost sight of the material world. This is the classic idea of what is an avaduta, and therefore just doesn't bother. Just doesn't bother conforming with material standards, material people, and their material conceptions, and simply acts in ways which are part of his connection with Krishna. So, Prabhupada makes an interesting point here, right at the end, by referring to how Maharaj Parikshit, just the verse before, which we read on Saturday morning, Maharaj Parikshit had requested the assembled sages, devotees, and Brahmins, please instruct me, what is the duty for all people at all times? But particularly, what is the duty of someone who's just about to die? Prabhupada makes the point here that it appears that when Maharaj Parikshit placed that question to the sages, they couldn't agree. You know, maybe it's like this, maybe you should do Ashtanga Yoga, maybe you should do a fire sacrifice, maybe you should do some fire walking. You know, different ideas. Maybe you should press your nose and stand on your head. Some sort of something. Anyway, one way or another, Prabhupada makes the point, it seems they couldn't come to, you know, a fixed opinion. And so Maharaj Pariksit's situation and his question and his just his whole very important situation was not being addressed. And then Shukadeva Goswami came on the scene as described. And because Shukadeva Goswami was so advanced in pure Krishna consciousness, and because those sages, even though they had different opinions, but they were able to recognize someone very advanced, as soon as he came in, everyone accepted, yes, he's the one. You must put your questions to him. So they gave him the seat, the raised seat, for the person who's going to address everyone. Yeah. And even interestingly enough, it's very, very significant, Vyasadeva was there. He was there. And everyone offered obeisances to Shukadeva and sat beneath him. And Vyasadeva did also, because he could just tell, this person is on the fully realized platform of full Krishna consciousness, higher than me. Not only that, but Narada Muni was there. Who's Narada Muni? And who is the spiritual master of Vyasadeva? And he also saw, he didn't think, yes, well, I'm senior, look at me. I'm so extremely senior. He offered obeisances to Shukadeva, and he sat beneath Shukadeva, and also requested, you please address us. You are the one to address us. So this is Shukadeva Goswami. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Jai Sachinanda Prabhu. Amazing. Completely.
Seventh chapter.
Seven.
The conversation between Narada Muni and Vyasadeva. And you speak of the Atmarama.
Atmarama's Chamudaya. Is it the seventh? Okay, is it? Or the fifth? It's the fifth, is it? Anyway, yeah, it's around there. Seven? Oh, okay. Anyway, yeah, you're right. There's mention of it. Actually, you're right. It's, Narada Muni's instructing Vyasadeva. Thank you. Swoop Damodaprabhu, bless us with some instructions. Anyone else? Yes.
You talk about renunciation.
Yes.
Abadu.
Yes.
In Chaitanya Lila, Raghunath Das.
Yes.
From a very rich Zaminda family.
Yes.
In his last days, he ended up in Jagannath Puri,
yes,
hanging around, taking the rice of all the wasted, and relishing that.
Yes. Yeah, Raghunath Das is a prime example of an extreme avaduta. Yes. He was eating, what was it? First of all, he was standing at the gate of the front entrance of the Jagannath temple. Just, you know, it's a place for beggars. You get beggars lining up there and just getting some mahaprasada. But then he thought, no, this is not good. It's like prostitution. Yeah, shouldn't do like this. And so what did he do? He went, he ended up, or he went to where they, he ended up where they throw out just the leftovers and the burnt stuff, and where the cows come to eat, and he would just take some, whatever he could find. And Lord Chaitanya came and found him and grabbed it away. He said, "You're feasting like this and you're not inviting me. What sort of character are you?" Yes. Yeah, Raghunath Das Goswami. Yes.
It's very interesting point about Parikshit Maharaj presented his request to all the sages, and there wasn't a consensus.
Right.
It's such an educational point for us that even though they may be rule or seeing things differently from each other on what to do or not to do, they still saw one thing in the same way, that there is someone that we can all agree that can point out what should be done, even though we may not understand it ourselves. And I think even on our level of awareness, practicing devotees, you know, there's any situation or any project or any plan of what we should or shouldn't do, still we should all defer to someone. We should all recognize someone, you know. And I think that's how our tradition works. Our society works also. We always look towards something, even though on our field level we may differ.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's brought up so nicely in this past.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. The great sages were not unanimous in their decision as to what was to be done. Yes, well, it's Krishna consciousness is personal, and we do, you know, we sort of gravitate and should towards persons. Of course, there's collective decision making also sometimes, but it's just, in a sense, another form of that. When you get a group of people who, each one of them in a sense, would be capable of making, you know, an appropriate ruling or decision. But when you get a group of them together, then you've really got wonderful opportunity for getting the best of the best decisions. Srila Prabhupada ki. Hare Krishna.